The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420. The Answer.
All right, welcome indeed. Appreciate you joining us this morning on AM 1420. The Answer, it's 8 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and we are loaded up this morning. Jim Jordan will be with us, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, in a half an hour. I'm looking forward to that for a lot of reasons, as you can imagine. And Secretary of State Frank LaRose will join us in the 10 o'clock hour as well. We'll talk about this battle to get Joe Biden on the ballot in the state of Ohio. It's going to happen. You heard Attorney General Dave Yost yesterday. Well, if you listened yesterday, and I certainly hope that you did, Attorney General Yost said it's going to happen. Biden's going to be on the ballot. Just forget any other nonsense about whether or not the incumbent president will be left off of the ballot of one of the 50 states. He's going to be on the ballot. It's only a matter of how and how much assistance the Republicans who lead the state of Ohio are willing to provide them to make it happen. The Democrats could make it happen any number of ways. First of all, they didn't have to make this bed that they are now lying in. The Democrats actually passed the 90-day certification rule before an election. It was the Democrats who did that, and now it's the Democrats who scheduled their nominating convention for, you know, 2.5 weeks after the deadline in the state of Ohio. That's a them problem. So it's going to get resolved one way or the other, Attorney General Yost said, but it'll be up to the Democrats and maybe the Secretary of State's office to figure out how. And so we'll talk to Frank LaRose about that a little bit later on. So Jim Jordan and Frank LaRose both on the program today. Looking forward to those conversations, as I am looking forward to talking to you at 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Either one of those numbers will get you up and on the radio with us. And there are a lot of things to discuss today, including a very, very robust top 9 at 9, which is coming up here in just a moment after we pledge allegiance to our flag. Let's start our program today, as we always do, by standing. Face your flag if you have one. If you don't, let's work on that. Let's get one in front of you wherever it is that you might be in the morning when you listen to this show and you do want to join in the pledge. If you don't have one, that's okay. You can imagine one in your mind's eye for now, but let's work on that. If you don't believe in the country, don't try to get a flag. In fact, don't stand at all. Just take a knee like a Marxist dog that you obviously must be. For the rest of us, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, like I said, a lot of news in the top 9 at 9. Let's dive in.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are?
Yeah.
We do.
It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
And they're varied today, too. They're wide and they are varied.
Number 1.
Starting with New York's show trial. It's kangaroo court. It's circus. In the persecution, politically, of President Donald Trump with a prosecution criminally. Prosecutors yesterday revealed the other crime that they claim former President Trump was trying to conceal when he allegedly falsified his business records. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, Fat Alvin, charged Trump with 34 counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. In order for prosecutors to secure a criminal conviction on that stupid nonsense, they must convince the jury that Trump allegedly committed the crime of falsifying records in furtherance of another crime. What is the other crime? Yesterday we found out. New York prosecutor Joshua Steinglass said the other crime was a violation of New York law called conspiracy to promote or prevent election. Did you catch that? Prosecutors now have to prove to the jury that there was a conspiracy to conceal a conspiracy to promote his candidacy. Donald Trump was running for president, and apparently that is against the law. They're calling that a crime. It's a thing. Conspiracy to promote or prevent election. That's what they're doing. And by the way, according to New York law, it's a misdemeanor. They're trying to lock Donald Trump up for misdemeanors. Tell me again that we don't live in a banana republic. Tell me again, Hillary Clinton, that this is President Trump wants to lock up his political opponents, not President Biden. Tell me again.
Number 2.
House GOP Conference Chair Elise Stefanik from New York sent a scathing letter to Biden officials yesterday about the ongoing anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, Jew-hating protests by a bunch of elitist little punk brat asses at Columbia University, demanding federal intervention. Yesterday, Columbia announced, by the way, the classes that they hold will no longer be held. They would be remote for the rest of the semester. In a letter dated yesterday, Stefanik wrote to the Education Secretary Miguel Cardona, the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, and Attorney General Merrick Garland, stating, quote, consequences are needed for those who are calling for terrorism and violent attacks. She cited the Immigration and Nationality Act, which states that anyone who endorses terrorism can become ineligible for American residency, and noted that protesters are brazenly endorsing Hamas and other terrorist organizations. I demand that you enforce existing law to revoke the visas and deport students here on visas who are suspended for their anti-Semitic actions. Representative Elise Stefanik.
Can you dig it?
Thank you. Thank you for stating what needs to be said there. There is no one who is here on a visa on American soil, a place they chose to come, who should be chanting death to America, that should be allowed to stay. Death to the nation that took you in and gave you an opportunity to study here or protest here. Bounce their happy little tablecloth-wearing arses out of my country.
Number 3.
GOP senators have demanded that colleges allowing the anti-Semitic protests and harassment to lose all of their federal funding. Another solid move. The disgusting displays of at times violent anti-Semitism that began at Columbia and has spread to other schools, dozens of them now in recent days, are a testament to what's wrong with the leftist-dominated higher education. You know that not every one of these little indoctrinated, brainwashed nutjobs went into school like that. They became radicalized by these schools. After years of unconstitutional attempts to block conservative speakers from their campuses in the name of leftist fragility, They now have little, if any, concern that those same intellectually weak leftists are calling for Israel to be eliminated, Jews to be murdered, and death to America. So now 25 members, more than 25 members of the Senate, led by Tom Cotton from Arkansas, are demanding that schools that allow, tolerate, or encourage such shocking and unlawful displays of anti-Jew and anti-Israel hate face accountability and a loss of all taxpayer funds. Hey, Senator Cotton.
Can you dig it?
Yes, I am indeed digging that as well.
Number four.
Joe Biden's recent polling bump, the little one that he got after they injected him with a whole bunch of energy drugs before the State of the Union address, he got a little bump in the polls after that in early March. It's gone, especially in all of the battleground states that will decide this election. A deep current of pessimism about the trajectory of the economy is killing his standing with voters. The April Bloomberg News Morning Consult poll found Biden is ahead in just one of the seven states most likely to determine the outcome of the election. And that's Michigan, where he leads by 2 points. Just 2 points. Biden trails President Trump in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin by slight margins, and larger margins in Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, and North Carolina. The reversion back to Trump-dominated polling comes as respondents offered a bleak near-term view of the economy, the issue that is consistently registered as their top concern in the ballot box, immigration and the southern border. A majority of the swing state voters see worsening economic conditions in the coming months, with fewer than one in five saying they expect inflation and borrowing costs to be lower by the end of the year. And just to throw it to you, to give you a real look at it, all states right now in April, according to Bloomberg, and again, it's important to point out the source of these polls. This is a Bloomberg poll. It's not a Fox poll or a Newsmax poll or some conservative poll that you could accuse of being a push poll. Nope. All states, Trump plus six. Georgia, Trump plus six. Nevada, Trump plus eight. Arizona, Trump plus seven. North Carolina, Trump plus 10. Wisconsin, Trump plus 4. And then the ones that are within the margin of error, Pennsylvania, Trump plus 1. And Michigan, Biden plus 2. So the polling is showing that the American people want Donald Trump back in the White House, at least right now, which is why they have him chained to a courtroom in New York.
Number 5.
The number of Chinese citizens that have come across the border from Mexico has skyrocketed. It's the fastest growing demographic of illegals in recent months, triggering serious concern among lawmakers in Washington. Tens of thousands of Chinese immigrants have been arrested by Border Patrol over the last year. Let me give you context. In 2022, fewer than 2,000 Chinese were stopped at the southern border. In the first half of this fiscal year, fiscal 2024, which started in October, in the first half of the year, Border Patrol agents have caught 24,000 Chinese illegal immigrants who have come into this country by walking through the unfenced areas. The head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement told lawmakers that China, by the way, is one of the top three countries in the world that he has identified as not doing anything to help receive their illegal immigrants. In other words, at present, China will not allow the U.S. to return Chinese who have been caught at the border and have fled their country. So what do we do with them? Allow them to stay or dump them off in a third world country just like the one that they came through to get here? At least that's my suggestion or solution to the problem.
Number 6.
Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky tweeted a video of the idiots on the House of Representatives, on the floor of the House of Representatives, who waved Ukraine flags and chanted Ukraine after the vote to give Ukraine $61 billion more of the dollars we don't have in order to keep corrupt Volodymyr Zelensky and the corrupt Ukrainian government flush with cash. He tweeted that video of them chanting Ukraine and waving Ukraine flags along with this caption. This is the U.S. House of Representatives under the direction of Speaker Mike Johnson. Democrats are celebrating his total capitulation with no victory for securing our border, hashtag MTV, which is for motion to vacate. Afterwards, Massey followed up with this tweet. Well, instead of fining Democrats for waving Ukrainian flags, the House Sergeant-at-Arms just called and said, I will be fined $500 if I don't delete this video post. Mike Johnson really wants to memory hold this betrayal of America. End quote. Well, apparently, Johnson finally realized how horrible this made him look. Fining Thomas Massey for posting a video of something that happened on the people's floor of the People's House of Representatives? Johnson tweeted late yesterday, quote, upon viewing Representative Massey's tweet, our team reached out to the Sergeant-at-Arms. I do not agree with this assessment, and there will be no fine imposed on Representative Massey. The fact that that was even a conversation lets you know exactly how crumbling the conservative movement, if you want to call it that, the conservative ideology is in the United States Congress. We have no home.
Number seven.
Republican Senator Ted Cruz is still working hard, though. He says the secret tool used by the tech industry to censor conservative voices is online service providers. Not just the censors that sit around, the moderators and sit around and cancel or shadow ban accounts. It's much, much worse than that. These service providers are systematically removing infrastructure services that conservative organizations need to operate. An investigation carried out by the Senate Commerce Committee identified companies such as Eventbrite, you probably heard of it, and Slack, that have withheld their services from conservatives for political reasons. Cruz's investigation honed in on Eventbrite's treatment of events that were centered around What is a Woman? That's the documentary by Daily Wire host Matt Walsh. The event company, which controls nearly half of the online event management market, claimed that screenings of the film violated their hateful events policy and yanked those pages of events across the country from its platform. Though groups were given only broad statements about why their access to Eventbrite was revoked, Cruz's committee found that action was taken even though nobody at the company ever bothered to watch the film. They deemed it to be a hateful event, the showing of this film, without ever watching the film. That lets you know how utterly contemptible the radical left is, particularly in the tech industry in Silicon Valley. They hate you more there than maybe they do in Washington, D.C. or Manhattan.
Number eight.
Some Ohio legislators are trying to do something good for a change, such as adding protections for homeowners against squatters. House Bill 478 could provide law enforcement with more authority when it comes to removing squatters, who are people, of course, who stake a claim to a property that's not theirs. Jeff Luray, who happens to be one of the Blue 22, but doing something decent here, said this is more of a preemptive idea. Squatting is not a huge problem in Ohio. It does occur throughout our state, but criminals might have a process to take advantage of property owner rights. So we're putting the process together to give those rights back to the property owners to take control of their house and avoid those situations. In many cities across the country, you probably know this, squatting has become a huge problem. Ohio has very few cases, but Luray says that Ohio deserves protection, especially if someone provides fake lease or rental agreements to squat on someone else's property. He said to remove a squatter from a property, it takes the power out of the hands of law enforcement, and the process could take weeks or months, resulting in a civil matter, which, of course, is just stupid. And I don't know what this bill is going to say, but I hope they do something about it, because stealing a house should be no different than stealing a car. Grand Theft Auto gets you prison. Grand Theft Home should get you prison, quite frankly. And finally,
number nine.
Hollywood? Doing something right? Not really, because it's a Homeland actor who is bashing Hollywood. Homeland, that's a TV show, actor David Harewood ripped Hollywood's fixation on making sure actors fit the identity of the roles that they're playing, going so far as to say white actors should be able to play black up and play characters of color. Quote, we're at this strange point in the profession where people go, oh, you can't play that role because you're not disabled, or you can't play that role because you're not really from there. The name of the game is acting, he said. Those who have pushed identity politics and diversity quotas in Hollywood casting in recent years have insisted that actors must match the roles they play in their real-life identities, particularly if the role is of a minority group. Various groups have called for ensuring that trans or disabled roles are only portrayed by trans and disabled actors, respectively. Meanwhile, roles traditionally portrayed by white actors have been played by actors of color in several recent films, and dare I say, on stage. Because did you know there wasn't a single white person in the phenomenally successful play Hamilton? Despite every single one of the characters on the stage being portrayed were white? Yeah. So kudos to David Harewood for trying to level the playing field, if you will. There you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, chew on those headlines and that news a little bit, if you will. We'll take your calls on it a little bit later on, because coming up after the bottom of the hour, Congressman Jim Jordan, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, will join us. We'll have Frank LaRose sometime in hour number two. And like I said, I want to hear from you. 216-901-0945 on Always Right Radio, AM 1420.
And The Answer.
All right, 9:35. Good Wednesday morning to you. Thanks for being with us. It is the 24th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. That's a lot of twos and fours there. Let's welcome Jim Jordan to our program. He is, of course, Ohio's 4th Congressional District Representative, the Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee and the Weaponization Subcommittee. Congressman, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. How are you today?
I'm bad. Our country's in terrible shape. I'm very, very bad. And I'm sure you are hearing a lot of that from some of your constituents as well. We're homeless. Congressman, we're homeless. We conservatives are homeless. We have nowhere to turn. There's no party we can turn to. We can't try to battle the progressives with conservatives in the Republican side, because the Republican Party just surrendered. Our Speaker just surrendered. I know you supported Speaker Johnson when he came up for vote for Speaker.
Yeah.
After you, of course, were nominated first for that spot and didn't get it. And I understand why you supported him, and I understand why you're supporting him now, but I am disgusted. I think conservative Americans everywhere feel like he just gave power to the Democrats, even though he only has a one-seat majority. The Democrats basically are saving him in exchange for giving them exactly what they want. How do you feel about that, sir?
Well, I thought there were some strategic things we could have done differently that would have put us in a better position to actually deal with the one issue that's top of voters' minds, top of citizens' minds, which is the border. I would have been in favor of, and we've talked about this, dealing with Israel separately and a month ago, passing the Israel aid that I think we should have done, like I said, a long time ago, but keeping that separate. But if you see, it's reported today that Schumer and McConnell made a pact that they were always going to keep Israel tied to Ukraine, because the Republicans, that to get Republicans to vote to Ukraine, they needed Israel as part of the package. And then to get some Democrats to vote for Israel, they needed Ukraine as part of the package. So they made a deal there. We should have separated those, in my judgment. And I said this to the conference. I said this to the press. We should have done this a month ago after Chuck Schumer made his ridiculous comments about Prime Minister Netanyahu. That would have been a better strategy. And then you say, okay, now if you really want money for Ukraine, then we got to fix our border before we're going to do that. Instead, we didn't get our border issue addressed. There's still migrants still just flooding in our country. And of course, Ukraine gets $61 billion, which more than half of us voted in the Republican conference voted against. I certainly did. So, it's frustrating, because I think there were strategic ways to do things, even in divided government, that would accomplish things that we need to do for our country and for the American people.
Yeah, and I understand where the Senate was, and I understand about that deal between Schumer and McConnell and everything you say. I get, but at some point, don't we have to fight? And allowing them to marry those together, the Ukrainian, the Israel funding, and not to do those separately, and to surrender without getting any more border security for us, whether it be in funds, which of course is less important than a change in policy with respect to asylum claims and so forth. I mean, how is it that we just continually lay down? I feel like we're not even fighting. We're walking into the middle of a ring against the Democrats every time, whether it's a spending bill, a budget, a supplemental like this. It doesn't matter what it is. We walk in, we touch gloves, and then we lay down and say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you're out. That's it. We don't even fight anymore. Speaker Johnson is fighting less than McCarthy did. He was supposed to be an improvement.
Yeah, I mean, I always, maybe I have a too simplistic approach to some to legislative tactics and strategy, but I view it like a wrestling match. And I learned a long time ago that in wrestling, if you stand around and you simply play defense, you're not going to win the match. You got to go on offense, but you don't do crazy offense. You do smart offense, and you smart pressure, smart offense, and you do it that way. That's what I'm advocating. I think it was smart offense to use the example I just described. To pass Israel and then say, no, we're not doing Ukraine, not until you do what we need done on the border, what the country needs done on the border, and then just wait. And that's smart offense, because now you got the Israel bill over there. It would have been over there before Iran did their terrible stuff to Israel 2 weeks ago. You can imagine the pressure they would be under to fund Israel, and then if you really want Ukraine funding, come talk to us. That's how I think a legislative operation should work. Then you're in a position to where you can get what we need for the on the border and on security and on stopping what's happening in exchange for Ukraine. And if you don't, you say, okay, sorry, we're not gonna fund Ukraine, because after all, you still haven't told us what the goal is, still haven't told us what the objective is. That's how you should do it, in my judgment. But we didn't, and that's the part that's so frustrating, because that's in your words, Bob, that's fighting smart, in my judgment. That's fighting in a way that says, okay, we recognize the lay of the land here. That Joe Biden's in the White House, and there's a majority in the Senate that are Democrats, but we also understand there's a majority in the House. And so we're going to use that majority in a smart fashion to get something done for the country. And again, that's how I thought it should have been done.
Yeah, I completely concur. Let me ask you this about Ukraine and about our commitment. And by the way, $61 billion we don't have. We literally just sent a note to Xi Jinping and said, "Will you loan us $61 billion so that we can then send it to Ukraine completely debt free and just add it to our tab?" How the hell we do such things, I will never understand. And Congressman, what I really want to understand is, why does everyone here who supports Ukraine think that this is some sort of democracy, some sort of you know, beacon of virtue in Eastern Europe that we should all be backing? It is a corrupt government. It's got a corrupt government led by a guy who canceled his country's elections and has declared that there will be no elections as long as there is a war going on. And he gets to decide along the war goes on. And he decides that by getting more money from us. So we are prolonging this thing and allowing a country that has no free elections, a country Congressman, I read the numbers yesterday. The latest survey from Ukraine, 89% of Ukrainians believe that their government is corrupt. 78% of Ukrainians say that their president is responsible for that corruption. So it's a corrupt government, and we're sending them money that we don't have, that we have to borrow from China. Make that make sense.
No, it doesn't. And the reason what 80-some percent of the Ukrainians think their government's corrupt is because it is. Like, it's one of the most corrupt places on the planet. And I actually think Zelensky may be a little less corrupt than the others. I mean, I think he's an improvement, but still, it's Ukraine, for goodness sake. We know how corrupt this place was. We've done this since clear back when the Democrats used Ukraine as the reason to impeach President Trump back in 2019. We've all known this. So we're going to continue to send money. It absolutely makes no sense. Not to mention, as you said, the $34 trillion debt we're under, and we're going to send billions of dollars. And remember, in this $61 billion, there was one line in there that said, I think it was $9.5 billion for economic support. What the heck is that? That's just money getting stuffed in somebody's pocket. Everybody understands that. But no,
that's not the worst one, Congressman Jordan. That's not the worst one. The worst one was $8 billion of American taxpayer dollars borrowed from China to fund the retirements and pensions of Ukrainian government officials. Ukrainian bureaucrats get their retirement funds padded by us. That's not stopping the Russians. That's not buying much needed munitions and transport vehicles and so forth to stop Vladimir Putin. They're stealing from us. And Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden, and they're waving flags, Ukrainian flags on the floor of Congress to celebrate the fact that they're stealing money from us.
Yeah, as opposed to Israel, where you know every penny is going into David Sling, Iron Dome, and weapon systems to fight off terrorists, to fight off the Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran. I mean, that is, we know that money. And by the way, Israel is our dearest and closest ally. And the idea that, oh, we're going to have to hold up funding for Israel until we get money to send to this corrupt place, Ukraine, makes no sense. That's the part that offends, I think, so many Americans so much. It's like, I mean, we could just keep going, but it was just wrong in my
And yet, if anybody says what you're saying right now or what I'm saying right now, we're considered pro-Putin. We're Russian tools. We're Russian assets because we're telling the truth about what's going on with this Ukrainian deal.
Well, you'll get called that by D.C. You'll get called that by the New York Times and the Washington Post. But Americans across the heartland, they actually think, well, Bob France and that Jordan guy are making sense right now as I'm listening to them. So normal people see it for what it is, because normal people have common sense. But it's, you know, the elite national media in the swamp in D.C. sees it different.
Yeah, no question about it. You mentioned Israel, so let's talk about that side of things, but particularly what's happening here. It is this is bizarre. I said earlier this week, I feel, I don't know if this is the 2020s or the 1930s. Jewish students, Jewish people generally, are being harassed and intimidated and pushed around, blockaded from entering certain places, being told go back to Poland, being told you don't belong here. Death to Israel, death to Jews, death to America on dozens of college campuses all over, where the violence is ramping up, where the the harassment is ramping up. Elise Stefanik says anybody who's here on a visa should be who is part of that should be deported. I want to know your thoughts on that. And Tom Cotton on the Senate side said every university that is allowing this stuff, much less encouraging it, should be defunded. No more federal funds to any of those universities that are allowing this to happen. How do you feel?
I agree with both of those. To the second point, my guess is you got professors who over the years have been encouraging this kind of stuff, who've been pro Hamas, pro Palestinian, the two state, everything else. But that's really not what the Hamas wants. They don't want a two state. They want a one state. They actually want to get rid of Israel, for goodness sake. All the more reason why we should be helping our dearest and closest friend, the state of Israel. So yeah. My guess is there's professors on these campuses who are so left-wing, they actually support the craziness that's going on the campus.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt that they do. And the fact that the university presidents, particularly Columbia's, one who 3 weeks after 9/11 said that terrorism is just another form of protest, she said that. She is perfectly fine with students on her campus, not just students, too. You've probably seen the videos of the encampments that they're building, their little autonomous zones and whatnot. And, you know, they all have the same exact types of tents. Well, clearly that's not organic. Not everybody has those. You know, these are probably professional agitators who are paid to come in and join students and to try to create this atmosphere. And this particular president is allowing it to go on. In fact, all of them are. But this particular one, because it's in New York and it's a private private campus, the New York City Police Department can't even go onto campus to protect the Jewish students. She won't let them. She has to invite them in. And so she is obviously very clearly another one of these university presidents. You mentioned the professors, but from the professors to the administrators, they are so left-wing that they are now reverting back to, like I said, what sounds like 1930-style language. They're allowing the persecution of Jews because they're Jews.
This is where radical woke and radical left inevitably lead. It's probably, you know, when you said like they all got the same tents and all that. I mean, we saw this play out with the summer of 2020, where you know there were there's supplies brought in for all the radical protests that were taking place across the country. You think about what took place in Portland and how organized that effort was of the assault on the federal court building out there, and then maybe even clear back to Occupy Wall Street. So it's like this is like. Like you said, professional agitators who are part of this. Same thing going on here, but this is so scary because it's attacking Jewish students and Jewish people in and around these universities. It's just so wrong.
Yeah, it is beyond wrong. And so what are we going to do? I haven't heard word one from Joe Biden. He was walking around on Earth Day with AOC in a forest someplace pretending to care about trees. And he gave an equivocal statement. He said it's wrong what they're doing, the anti-Semitism and the anti-Jewishness and stuff. He said, but it's also wrong that people don't understand exactly what the Palestinian supporters are standing for. He gave essentially a there are very fine people on both sides kind of response there. Why is he not condemning? Why is he not condemning this radical death to America stuff that's going on our higher campuses of higher higher learning? I should say,
because he's a Democrat and he can the press lets him get away with it. There's only people like Bob France who'll call him out. I mean, the mainstream press lets him get away with it. And frankly, he's thinking about politics. He's thinking about the state of Michigan. Everyone understands that this is today's left. I always say, like, not all Democrats are crazy, but the left that now controls their party is. And you can just see that across the board with the positions they're taking on Israel and on the stuff going on, the crazy stuff going on these college campuses, the positions they take on defunding the police, the positions they take on not having a border, the positions they take on, they actually think boys should compete against girls in sport. You can just go down the list. The left, which now controls that party, has all kinds of crazy positions. And I think in some ways, this election is about, do you want the party that represents common sense, or do you want the party that represents crazy? And I think most Americans say, I kind of like common sense. So it's because that's today's left.
Yeah, and they're doing everything they can to keep their power, including what they're doing to Donald Trump right now. I want to play a clip here. It's critical of you, but I want to give you a chance to respond to it, because I think what Alvin Bragg is doing, what Fannie Willis is doing, obviously all of the prosecutors who have targeted President Trump are doing, they're working at the behest of Merrick Garland, I would say. And Steve Bannon says you guys and judiciary need to do more about this. I'm going to play this real quick for you.
Why is Jordan, why does he not have a criminal conspiracy investigation from Fannie Willis in Georgia to Big Tish James in New York City, the Justice Department? Why have they not been sent letters? Preserve your documents. Why have hearings not gone on? Why have they not broken these things up? You know why? Because they don't really have Trump's back. They want MAGA to go away. They want Trump to be defeated in November. Yes, yes, I know. I said the quiet part out loud.
I don't believe that last part at all, but the question about, is there anything you can do at judiciary about calling some of these people out, some of these prosecutors out, and indeed demanding that they preserve their records and prepare for hearings?
We've not only demanded that, we've been further preserved the record. We've asked for records. We've subpoenaed records, because particularly, you have to have a federal nexus here. You have to have so the key is what kind of federal funds were used in the prosecution, both of Alvin Bragg and of President Trump in Manhattan and Fannie Willis in Atlanta. And so we have asked for that information. We've brought in Mark Pomerantz, who was the guy who wrote the book, and we actually had him in for a deposition, had to subpoena him, and he didn't. Alvin Bragg said, don't come. We took it to court, and the judge said, no. The court said, no, you got to go be deposed. So we did that last spring. So we're doing all we can do to deal with this and to highlight just how wrong it is. I mean, we have an op-ed coming out, I believe today, that walks through all the things in New York that are wrong with how this investigation is run and what they've been doing to President Trump there. So, of course, I want President Trump to win. Best president we've had certainly in our lifetime. Of course, I want him to win. So I don't know what Steve's talking about there. But I'm happy to go on.
Yeah, I don't believe that last part at all. I know you were very supportive of President Trump. By the way, where will the op-ed come out? Where can I read it?
I don't know, because we put it together yesterday. It's okay. Two colleagues and I, our media people are figuring out if it's going to be in the Post or Fox or wherever it's going to be. Gotcha. But we worked on that op-ed, but that'll be coming out.
So just real quick on the trial that's underway right now, this ridiculous falsifying business records trial. Yesterday they revealed the underlying crime. Apparently, in order for prosecutors to convict, they have to prove that he committed the crime of falsifying business records in furtherance of another crime. The other crime detailed yesterday finally by the prosecutor, Joshua Steinglass, was trying to win an election. Yeah, right? I mean, the law, the violation of the law is called, quote, conspiracy to promote or prevent election. So they're saying that he committed conspiracy to conceal a conspiracy to try to win an election. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what they're doing to tie this guy to a courtroom for the next 4 months or longer in order to stop him from being able to campaign for president, right?
falsified business records, they're saying, supposedly falsified big business records to help him win the 2016 election. But the falsification of the business records took place in 2017. Well, come on. Like, I mean, it's crazy. This is from 8 years ago. And remember, the Department of Justice wouldn't bring the case. They wouldn't charge. The Federal Elections Commission said there's no fault here. We're not going to bring any kind of elections case here. Cy Vance, the former DA in Manhattan, didn't bring the case. And even Alvin Bragg didn't bring the case when he first got elected. And it wasn't until President Trump announced that he was running for president that they said, oh, Shazam, we better come up with a case. We better figure out a way we can charge President Trump with a crime, with a felony. And what can we do? Well, we're going to make this up. We're going to say he falsified some documents in furtherance of winning the election because he wanted to keep this information from the American people. It is the most ridiculous. And, oh, by the way, our star witness is going to be Michael Cohen, who lied 6 times in front of Congress and is a perjurer and perjured himself. That's going to be our star witness. And when we get to the trial, we're going to put a gag order on President Trump, and we're not going to let him know who the witnesses the prosecutor is going to call until the very last minute, which is contrary to how it's supposed to work in these trials. That's the case. And people are like, what the heck is going on in our country? So we're pointing all that out. And I think, I think the vast majority of the American people see through it, and it's going to backfire.
Well, they do, according to the latest polls. Bloomberg just this morning, in the top 7 battleground states, Trump is leading in all but one of them. So most of them comfortably, +6, +6, +7, +8. A couple of them within the margin of error. Pennsylvania is +1. North Carolina is +10. The only one that Biden is winning in is Michigan, +2. Now you know why. They have him tethered to that courtroom, because if he actually goes out there and tries and is able to see the people and really kind of point out the differences between, you know, his term and what was done and what Biden is doing right now, it would expand exponentially. Biden is finally out of the basement. He's allowed to campaign because they know Trump isn't. And so they figure this is their only way to get this done. It is election interference, as President Trump has said from the very beginning. And like I said, you asked me how I was doing at the beginning of the show or the beginning of our conversation, Congressman. Now you know why I said bad.
Yeah, well, trust the American people, and we got an election in 6.5 months. I was campaigning all day yesterday in Pennsylvania with a good candidate, Dave McCormick, for United States Senate. Yesterday was here in Ohio around our great district. But we got good Senate candidates out there, Bernie Marino in our state, Dave McCormick next door in Pennsylvania, President Trump at the top of the ticket. We got to win, and they always say these elections are so important, but this election with who's going to be the next commander in chief at this critical time, I think, is just so darn important.
It is.
And I feel good about it. I feel good about our chance.
Well, we're going to keep our fingers crossed and keep working very hard over the course of the next six months, and I know you will as well. Congressman, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. All right. That's Jim Jordan. It's 9:56. We'll take our time out here on Always Right Radio. Yeah, I mean, you know what's equally frustrating, or maybe as frustrating as anything else that he and I just discussed, going back now to the beginning of the conversation on funding Ukraine and what Mike Johnson has done here, which is very, very similar in my view, very, very similar to what Jason Stevens has done. He has relied on Democrats to get something done, and he is going to owe them big time, the same way Stevens does Ohio Democrats. I want Johnson gone because of this and because of a lot more, quite frankly, but I don't want him gone now. Because we're 6 months from the election. If we have to have a new speaker vote, or a multitude of votes like we did after they bounced McCarthy and go through all this again now, it's going to damage the Republican brand even more than it's already damaged itself between now and November. So we can't even do it. We got to stand behind this clown. And I'm sorry, Mike Johnson is an absolute clown. I know Hugh Hewitt just had a fawning interview with him, and I love Hugh as much as I love anybody. But I'll tell you what, that was... Mike Johnson's got to go, and it can't happen now. It's going to have to happen next year. But we're in a bad place right now. We'll be back.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
All right, good morning. Thanks for being with us. Hour number 2 is underway now. It's 8 minutes past 10. It is the 24th morning of the fourth month, the year of our Lord, 2024. Thanks again to Congressman Jordan. If you missed that interview, and you should not have missed that interview, you can catch up to it on the webpage after the show, whkradio.com. Maybe even before that, but I'd prefer that you wait. If you listen to it now, you will not be able to hear the rest of the great stuff we have, including we're going to talk to Secretary of State Frank LaRose in about a half an hour about a number of things, including what it's going to take for Joe Biden to get on the ballot in the state of Ohio in November because of their monumental screw-up. And we'll talk about a few other things with respect to elections, election transparency, election security, integrity, and more. So that is still to come. Phone lines are open for you now at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. I want to share something with you here because this is something I played yesterday during the Top 9 at 9. And it was just a short clip of it. The full version of this is 2 minutes long, 2 minutes and 13 seconds long. And I give you a short clip of it just to make a point. And I want to further that point now as we talk about this. This is a 12-year-old girl is what I see here. A 12-year-old girl in a middle school in suburban Philadelphia who had the courage to go before her school board along with several other adults, and tell the story of what happened to one of her friends who was attacked in her school by a biological male pretending to be a female. The male student had apparently put out a hit list about everybody that he was going to beat and try to kill. This girl tried to warn the authorities to stop it because she was terrified because her name was on it. The authorities would do nothing. And I think there's a pretty good reason why. So I want you to listen to this emotional statement of testimony, if you will, by this 12-year-old girl before the school board. This happened on the 18th. She followed her dad, who opened the public comment just after the assistant superintendent there read a statement announcing he wouldn't be commenting on or answering any questions or concerns from parents and students about this. They're dodging, they're hiding because of what they did in this circumstance, which is not protect the kids. So I want you to listen to this. It's important.
So Wednesday morning, I went to the guidance counselor and told her since I was second on the hit list, knowing that there was something going to happen, because there was a girl she was targeting every day at lunch. And they would go to the counselor and tell them every day that this is going to happen. And Wednesday, I went with two others, and each of us filled out a whole paper full of what's going to happen and why it's going to happen. And then I went to chorus, and I was told, watch your back. He is going to come for you and this other girl at lunch. And when I was at lunch, I was terrified. And I told Miss Fattori that that was happening. And she said, don't worry about it. It's not going to happen. And early that morning, I was told I was not going to see Mel for the rest of that week. But I was in lunch. And all of a sudden, I just hear all this screaming and everybody running. And I see Mel running in after somebody. And everyone's screaming and running. But the girl who got attacked didn't see it because she was faced backwards. And all of a sudden, you just hear these terrible, like, loud bangs of the Stanley bouncing off her head. And then you see Mel grabbing her hair and hitting her against the table and just repeatedly hitting her with the Stanley. There was blood going everywhere. I was the table right behind it. And all you see is blood everywhere. And it was just... And then you say in your email that it was 8 minutes, but we timed it. It was 28 minutes. And we had to sit in there and watch them clean up her blood off those tables and ground. And we had to watch them take her out with blood dripping down her face. And I will never forget that. And laying in bed last night, I just kept repeating it in my head. And we shouldn't have had to sit there and just watch them clean up her blood with the mop. Watch her repeatedly yelling that I'm going to murder you and just hitting her with a Stanley. Oh, and I don't get how, you couldn't have stopped it. It was 5 hours from when I told you it was going to happen and when it happened. It was 5 whole hours. I don't get how you couldn't have stopped that. And how Ms. Fattori said, don't worry, it's not going to happen. We have her under control. But clearly you didn't.
That is a brave but traumatized little girl who is absolutely going to think about this probably for many years to come. She will have PTSD. She watched her friend being beaten with the... Do you know what a Stanley Cup is? And I don't mean the trophy that you get for winning the NHL. The Stanley Cups, they're big, they're hard, they're metal. She was beating this child in the head. He, this trans student, was beating this girl in the head with this thing, beat her bloody. You just heard the testimony there, before the school board anyway, not that it's sworn testimony, but of the young girl. And she said, I asked you to do something about this because we told you it was going to happen. We begged for you to do something to stop this because he has made a hit list. I'm second on it. And as soon as he's done beating this girl, he's going to come for me. And the school said, don't worry about it. Do you know why the school said, don't worry about it? Do you think the school authorities and administrators would have said, don't worry about it? If there had been a student who said that this white boy who has said racist things is going to come for some of the black students, has a hit list put together and is going to come for some of the black students or from some of the Latino students or whatever the case might be, and there's a hit list and we're worried, do you think they would have investigated? Do you think they would have talked to that child? Do you think they would have investigated and done something to prevent this? You know they would have. In fact, there is probably no other demographic or identity of a student whatsoever that they wouldn't have said, immediately taken steps to stop this, to prevent this terrible thing from happening. There's no other demographic other than the one this kid was, which was trans, a boy who says he's a girl. There is no way that the school administrators were going to call this kid into the office and accuse him of planning a vicious, violent assault and attempted murder of girls in the classroom. There's no way, because that would have been targeting the kid, and they would have been called bigots. They would have been called phobes. They would have been called unsafe. It would be said that instead of providing affirming care for this child, they targeted this child for baseless, allegations with baseless allegations and so forth. They won't do anything. Have you noticed the rate of violent attacks that are being carried out by the quote unquote trans community in recent months and in the last couple of years? Not just beatings, but school shootings, violent attacks, they're becoming the norm. And the reason why is because these kids are having their heads, they're already warped. These quote-unquote trans kids are already warped enough to have gender dysphoria, or more specifically, to be victimized by the social contagion that is kind of intended to mirror gender dysphoria. The actual condition, The psychological condition of gender dysphoria is so rare, it's less than 0.5% of the population. Okay? Less than 0.5%. It's extremely rare. It's like having multiple personality disorder or split personality disorder. It's a condition where somebody's head is completely at odds with where their body is, and they need psychological therapy and treatment, right? That's a very, very, the overwhelming majority of people who identify themselves as trans don't have gender dysphoria. They have been victimized by the social contagion. And so they participate in this and they say, that's what I am, because they want to be special. They're told it's the only way to be special, to get attention, to be supported, and so forth. And they go through all of this nonsense. Well, guess what? They're having their little emotional, now let me rephrase, they're having their psychological conditions, which are already in peril, they're having them worsened by being treated like little narcissists. What I mean by that is no one dares tell them no. No one dares tells them they're wrong. No one dares to correct them, because you can't. Because now you're not affirming care, and this kid is going to go kill himself or herself unless you affirm it. They've given them a feeling of, like I said, a narcissistic kind of tendency to believe, I'm always right. I'll do what I want. They won't stop me. They can't stop me because I'm trans. I'm special. If somebody even says the wrong pronoun, somebody's getting suspended. If somebody dead names me, somebody's getting fired. They've given these kids who are already of a very, very fragile state of mind, a fragile psychological makeup, and they've given them the power to feel like they can do whatever they want and no one will say anything to them. And they've done so intentionally. That's what they've done to these kids. And so here you got a kid who is a biological male beating the hell out of girls, telling them you're next. Girls go to the school terrified, saying he's going to do this to me. Oh, no, don't you worry about it. He'll be fine. And they don't even intervene. They don't even talk to the person because if they do, they're going to have to say, hey, there's concerns that you might get violent. And then you know what happens? That kid goes home and tells a parent or maybe goes down the hall to tell the counselor who ends up telling somebody who puts it online or a local news source that says school accuses trans kid of being potentially violent. Just another attack on the poor trans community. Because remember, gender-affirming care, which is what they call it, when you ban that, they're saying you are opening up the floodgates for people to commit assaults and to attack and to harass and to intimidate the poor trans kids. Anything that gets in the way of their agenda is disallowed. And talking to that kid and trying to tell them or to determine whether or not there's going to be a violent attack and to try to prevent it would be getting in that kid's way, and they won't even touch it. People ask me from time to time, why do you spend so much time on your show talking about the trans situation and the trans movement? First of all, it's one of the number one issues in the entire country. The state of our country is in the hands of our children. You understand that. The future of the country is in the hands of the kids. Not to be dramatic about, I believe the children are our future, but they are. Obviously, they always have been. The youngest generation is always eventually going to be the controlling generation. And guess what? This generation is becoming warped in ways that no one has ever seen before. None. Never. Particularly this trans movement, which is being advanced by a radical political agenda being driven by the progressive left to generate more political power. Did you notice, as evidence of what I just said, that it was only a week ago, 2 weeks ago? Did you remember what I told you? That the Biden campaign has unleashed their new secret weapon, the LGBTQ community. They said as the campaign goes on and as the election gets closer and closer, they're looking for ways to tap into, some sort of vein of the electorate that they haven't gotten yet. And that is the LGBTQ community. They said they are so extraordinarily powerful and we are going to unleash them. They called it out for Biden, as in out of the closet and working for Joe Biden. It is a political monster, and they are doing everything they can to pull more kids in. Look, this is every bit as plain to see as is the importing of millions of illegal aliens and then giving them the right to vote, because they will forever vote for the party that allowed them to come in, the Democrat Party. They will thank them for the free stuff, for the free room, the free board, the free clothes, the free housing, the free education, the free medical care. But they'll thank them by continuing to vote for the people who give it to them. In the same way, the Democrats have kept Black America in that same psychological, political, ideological plantation. You want free stuff? You want EBT? You want Section 8 housing? You want all of this assistance? You got to keep us in power because the Republicans are going to make you go to work. This is the reality of it. This is what the Democrats tell them. That's why Biden has the you know what's to look at the black electorate in America and say, if you don't even vote for me, you ain't really black. What? How insulting is that to black people? Well, that same mentality that they use there, they're using now in the trans and the LGBTQ community. The more of them that we can bring on board our train right now, just like the illegal alien voters or whatever, the more we cement our power. And so in order to keep them coming, we have to brainwash them. We have to not only brainwash them and indoctrinate them, we have to defend them against anybody that comes for them. Anybody who comes critically of the movement, anybody who provides, you know, there, I have another story. I don't even have it open right now, but it was one of the stories I prepped for today, pointed out that the researcher who put together the UK massive compendium, this huge summary of why it is that they are no longer recommending puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones and surgeries for trans kids, because there's absolutely no evidence, no matter how much the quote-unquote pseudoscientists or those practicing scientism want you to believe that this is care for these kids, there is no practical benefit that has ever been identified in any long-term study of kids who trans themselves. So this individual, according to the story, can no longer take public transportation in the UK. This person is being threatened everywhere she goes, this researcher, everywhere she goes. She's being attacked professionally, and she is being threatened with attack physically because she dared to cross the trans movement. You understand that? So people ask me, why do you care so much about this? Why do you talk about it all the time? This is why we talk about it all the time. First of all, truth has to matter. Second of all, reality has to matter, and reality must be objective. Not subjective, not the reality that I create, not the truth that I see, my truth. You know, my truth is different than your truth. No, it's not. There is just the truth. You can have your reaction to the truth, your feelings about the truth, your opinion about the truth. It's all welcome. But there is no your truth. And the truth is that children come in two sexes. They grow up to be adults that are in two sexes. There are males and there are females. And don't give me this sex is different than gender. Gender is nothing more than another word for personality. There are males, biological males, who have feminine personalities. That doesn't make them women. There are biological females that have more masculine personalities. There are biological males and females that have a little bit of both. Sometimes they're masculine, sometimes they're feminine. That doesn't make them two sexes. It doesn't make them non-binary. It doesn't make them triple binary or whatever they're calling if they're three or four different things. Seasonal. That was the other one. We had this the other day. Seasonal. They change genders when the weather changes. Those are personality traits. Those are not biological sex or biological gender. And so by kissing the rear ends of these little confused kids who are already in fragile psychological states, creating little narcissists who think I can do no wrong. Everything I do is right, and they have to agree with it, or else they're going to hurt me, or they're afraid that I'm going to hurt myself. They have these people wrapped around their fingers. Do you want to know why we talk about this? Ask that little girl. Ask that little girl why her friend got beaten bloody in a class or in a cafeteria with a hard Stanley object when the school knew it was coming. Ask why that was allowed to happen. And then you'll know why we talk about this. All right, it's 10:27. I need a timeout. Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer.
The Answer.
Okay, 10:35. And onward we roll. Again, if you missed the conversation with Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan agrees, by the way, that Lee Stefanik, that all of these protesters who are screaming death to America, if they're in this country on a student visa, gone, done. You say death to America, you harass and intimidate and commit somewhat violent acts against Jews for being Jewish, screaming for genocide of the Jewish people and an end to the Israeli state, gone, bye, done, deported. Get them out. I agree. Tom Cotton says not another nickel of federal dollars should go to any school that is allowing this stuff to happen on their campuses. Any calls for terrorism and this sort of thing should absolutely be quashed immediately at the threat of losing federal funds. I agree with both of those things. Let's see if the respective chambers in the United States Congress is willing to do anything about it. Coming back home now to Ohio, Joe Biden is in trouble. He's in serious trouble, not necessarily in Ohio, although it is widely expected that Donald Trump is going to win the state for the third consecutive time. But He's in trouble in a lot of other places. I just told you about the Bloomberg numbers. The battleground states, the seven states that are going to decide this election, yeah, they're all trending Trump. +7, +6, +6, +8, +10 in North Carolina. Only +1 in Pennsylvania, +4 in Wisconsin. The only battleground state that Biden has going for him is Michigan, +2. So if he is going to win, he's going to need to win all of those battleground states, and he's going to need to make a dent in Ohio. The question is he even going to be on the ballot in Ohio? Because his party is too freaking stupid to check the calendar to see exactly what each state's rules were with respect to being certified to be on the ballot. In Ohio, it's 90 days. They went ahead and scheduled their convention, their nominating convention, only about 72 days or so from the actual election. So guess what? Biden's in trouble, and now he wants the Republicans to bail them out. The Democrats are livid that the Republicans aren't just falling all over themselves trying to help the Democrats undo their own mistake. They say they're trying to block Biden from the ballot. Let's see if we can make any sense out of this with the man who runs Ohio's elections. That is our Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, joining us now on AM 1420, The Answer. Secretary LaRose, good to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm doing good, Bob. And on the topic you were just on with Congressman Jordan and with Senator Cotton, I joined the Jewish student group called Hillel at the Ohio State University on Monday night for the first night of Passover for their traditional dinner called a Seder. And the stuff I was hearing from these great young Ohioans, they were, you know, worried about not wearing their Star of David necklace anymore, maybe tucking it in their shirt, things like that. The rise of anti-Semitism is something that we've got to call out. It's not just an East and West Coast phenomenon. It's happening in some cases here in Ohio. We need to stand with these students and with Israel.
I am so glad to hear that you did that. That's fantastic. Congratulations to you for doing the right thing. You know, Secretary LaRose, I have not heard of any, like, really wild radical protests at Ohio State like we have seen at campuses all over the country. Are you aware of that? Are you hearing specific things? I know you said those kids are worried about wearing their stars or being identified. I mean, it's not as radical at Ohio State as it has been at other places, right?
Not quite yet. There have been some incidents where there were protests at the student union recently where people were chanting, you know, jihadist kind of things. That needs to be stamped out. That's not appropriate. I mean, again, First Amendment free speech is one thing, but calling for jihad, calling for the extermination of the Jewish people, which is essentially what you're saying when you talk about from the river to the sea. I mean, these are not just casual phrases. You're talking about genocide.
Yeah,
and
spot on.
We've seen some acts of vandalism on Ohio State's campus. We've had some acts of intimidation. Thankfully, nothing on the scale that you're seeing at Columbia and some of these other places. But we got to be on guard against it. Listen, every year when we do Holocaust memorials, we say things like never again and never forget. Those are just words unless you manifest those into action by standing up and saying anti-Semitism's not welcome here in Ohio.
Yeah, you know, you are so right. I made that same statement a couple of times in this week alone, that I sometimes feel like the 2020s are like the 1930s, where Jewish kids are afraid to be identified as Jews. They're being blockaded from entering some parts of campus. They are being harassed. They're being followed. They're being pushed. And as you just said, you know, they're hiding their star. Can you imagine? I mean, if this was against Christians, if I had to make sure that the cross I wear on a chain around my neck was hidden because I might be targeted because of it. I mean, no one should have to go through this, particularly a group, the Jews, who have already gone through this. And 2/3 of European Jews were wiped out, for crying out loud, like you said, just 80 years ago.
Well, it's right there in Genesis. God's promise to Abram before he became Abraham was, I will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee. So it makes all the sense in the world, even if you're not a person of faith. But for those of us who are Christians, we're commanded to stand with the Jewish people.
Amen.
And God forbid, by the way, that they speak up in class and say something crazy like, you know, it wasn't Israel that started this. It was Hamas that started this. And Israel has every right to finish it. And that means continuing their operations in Gaza until the Jewish homeland is not under threat. That's common sense, but you can't say that in a college campus these days without getting shouted down and maybe even threatened.
Or worse, yeah. Is he shouted down or worse? We are talking with Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose. I'm really, really glad to hear you opine upon that. So thank you, Frank. I want to talk about the election now. And yesterday I spoke with the Attorney General, Dave Yost, and this is part of what he had to say, and I'll get you to respond to this, with respect to Joe Biden's status on being on the ballot in November.
I just want to say I fully expect that Joe Biden will be on the ballot. Whether that's a change in the law or there's a lawsuit or they figure out a way to move the deciding part of their convention. Obviously, they're not going to change all the hotels and everything, but they could nominate him perhaps earlier. The incumbent president of the United States is going to be on the ballot in Ohio. But on my watch, they're going to do it according to the law, not pretend that the law doesn't exist or that it doesn't say what it says.
And that's the key, isn't it, Secretary LaRose? He's going to be on the ballot, but they're going to have to fix this, and they're going to have to do it legally. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, so I'm not going to predict what may or may not happen because I'll likely be the defendant in such a lawsuit. I'll say this. My hope is that the General Assembly works on getting this resolved. I mean, it certainly makes sense for both parties to be able to have their candidate on the ballot. But I'll say this, too. The law is the law. It's not a technicality like some of these knucklehead liberal reporters have been saying. Oh, it's an obscure technicality that LaRose is enforcing. No, it's the law. I raised my right hand and took a solemn oath to uphold the law. And by the way, this law that I am executing faithfully was put in law by the Democrats. It was 2009 when Ted Strickland was governor, when Armin Budish was Speaker of the House. Every Democrat in the General Assembly voted for it, and they established a 90-day deadline before the election for candidates to be certified. It's no different than this. If you want to run for township trustee or county engineer, you've got to turn in your petitions to the Board of Elections by a deadline. Guess what? If you show up the day after the deadline, you're not on the ballot. And the Democrats have offices full of attorneys that focus on what they call ballot access. That means how to get their candidates on the ballot. The fact that they weren't paying attention to this deadline is pretty silly, quite honestly. And then, you know, I had the temerity to point out to them, you are on track to miss a deadline. I thought that was the friendly thing to do. But again, knuckleheads like the Cleveland Plain Dealer say, I'm playing partisan politics by following the law. It's nonsense. I hope they get it resolved, but I know what my duty is, and my duty is to follow the law.
Let's say that part again a little more slowly. You informed them that they were going to miss the deadline according to Ohio law, not Frank LaRose's own personal rules or Frank LaRose's own personal beliefs, that Ohio law, by Ohio law, he was going to miss the ballot deadline, and you informed them. They didn't come to you. You just went out of your way to tell them, by the way, you guys might want to deal with this here because according to the law, you can't be on the ballot if you would nominate him at the time of your convention. You went to them, right?
That's correct. We were sitting down with our legal team to do our prep for the November timelines, all the different deadlines we've got to be prepared for, doing this right after the primary. And we got to August 7th on the calendar, and that's the deadline for parties to notify us. And I said, wait a second, somebody Google this. When is the Democratic Convention? I didn't know the dates because I don't plan to attend it. And we looked it up, and it was, you know, the 19th through the 22nd of August. I said, wow, they might not know they're about to miss a deadline here. We should let them. I called the Democratic chairman. She never called me back, by the way. We sent her a letter and said, hey, you guys should be aware of this. If I was really playing games, if I wanted to be a jerk about this, I would have simply waited until August 8th. And I would have told all the boards of elections, there's one candidate on the ballot in Ohio, and his name is Donald J. Trump. And then everybody would have been, you know, up in arms. I thought it's the right thing to do to at least notify them that this deadline is approaching and they are on track to miss it. But somehow, again, the knuckleheads at the Cleveland Plain Dealer editorial board think it's me playing partisan politics by following the law.
Yeah, and they're blaming Dave Yost, too, because Dave Yost correctly backed you as the Attorney General, saying that the Secretary is right. The law says what the law says. They can't do it by granting an exception here or some sort of a provisional certification before the actual certification. So, you know, the Attorney General said to me yesterday that he doesn't expect them to move the convention up and change all of the hotels and everything else, but they can do it with a lawsuit, and you just said you'd be the defendant. How does that work? They sue you that file a suit against you that says what?
Yeah, well, there's three possible paths. The state legislature could give them a couple extra weeks, which is happening. And there's some action right now that they may do that. The Democrats could nominate their candidate earlier, which, again, they have to work within their party bylaws to get their national committee together to do that or what have you. The third option, which I guess is always an option, unfortunately, is that they could file a federal lawsuit. They could find some federal judge to basically say Ohio's law is irrelevant here. We're just going to ignore that and order the Secretary of State to put Joe Biden on the ballot. Again, my hope is that this can be worked out without litigation, but I'm used to getting sued. There's always a rush to the courthouse right before the elections, usually by liberal activist groups. This could be just another in the list of lawsuits that we expect at some point this year.
So, yeah, and you're right. I get it. You can't really predict what they are going to do. But it's frustrating to me that they are trying to throw stones at you and the Republicans as if you guys are somehow doing to Biden in Ohio what they tried to do to Trump in Colorado and in Maine. Because that's one of the tracks that I've seen them taking, not just at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, but all across left-wing media, saying that they're trying to keep Biden off the ballot because they know Trump can't win. This is nowhere near what they tried to do to Trump in Colorado and Maine, right?
No relation whatsoever. In fact, what happened in Colorado was an activist Secretary of State dredged up the old 14th Amendment, which was put in place right after the Civil War to keep Confederate officers out of Congress, basically, and said, hey, we're going to try to use this to keep the candidate we fear, Donald Trump, off the ballot. What we're doing is simply saying there's a deadline. Any party, any candidate has to comply with it. One party is holding their convention in time. The other party is holding their convention too late to comply with that, and we've given them several months' notice so that they can make sure to comply with the deadline or get something changed by working through our legislature.
So, Secretary LaRose, we're talking to Secretary of State Frank LaRose about the situation in November. What else do you have to say about the integrity of the elections? Do you believe, and this is beyond Ohio, I feel like we're doing pretty well. We didn't have any of the questions and the irregularities that we saw in some of the other states, obviously, 4 years ago. But do you think that other states are making corrections, are learning from some of the mistakes that led to the irregularities, if not the outright fraud in other states? Do you believe that we will have a free and fair election across this country in November, sir?
I think that Ohio proves as an example of how to do this. I think other states have a lot of work to do. The good news is that they know we're watching, and that is an effort of the Republican committee having poll watchers and observers in every state kind of thing. Although I'll caution people that the biggest concerns that I have are not some secretive black ops cloak and dagger kind of thing that's often the subject of people's YouTube videos or whatever else. The cheating, the rigging, whatever title you want to apply to it, bad things that the left does to try to put their thumb on the scale don't happen in secret. They often happen in full public view. In fact, they're very proud of them. It's usually last-minute lawsuits trying to change the law at the state house or the courthouse instead of the state house. It's also activism by secretaries of state where they just announce, hey, we're not going to enforce this law. We're going to selectively enforce the law. For example, we're going to stop doing list maintenance, even though the law requires us to, for example, remove dead people from the voter rolls. We're going to stop doing that. Or we're going to arbitrarily extend the deadline for receiving absentee ballots. Or we're going to put drop boxes on every street corner without the right safeguards to prevent ballot harvesting and that kind of thing. Of course, we don't do that nonsense in Ohio. It does happen in other states. But again, it's not a secret. It happens out there in public view. I just became I'm set in a week to become the chairman of the Republican Secretaries of State Committee. I was just elected by my colleagues, the other Republican secretaries around the country, to chair our national group. And one of the things that I'm encouraging my fellow secretaries to do is not settle these lawsuits. It's tempting. Your lawyers will advise you to sometimes to settle the lawsuit. Give the ACLU 30% of what they're asking for so that the lawsuit goes away. The problem with that is that it's a lot like paying the hostage taker. When you pay the hostage taker, they only take more hostages. If you give the ACLU 30% of what they're asking for this year, next year they're going to come back for the next 30 and the year after that, and they're probably going to raise a bunch of money off of it too, not to mention the fact that you're allowing them to change election laws at the courthouse, which is not how it should happen.
That's a very good analogy. You're exactly right. It's why we don't negotiate with hostage takers for that exact reason. Secretary LaRoz, I'm reading an article, or I at least glanced at one today in Just the News, where you are commenting, I guess it was on a podcast, about early voting. I remember talking with you about this. I'm going to ask you to put on your partisan Republican hat now and take off the Secretary of State hat, if you can, and talk about the importance of early voting. You know, again, I tried to push that last August during the special election. I tried to push it in November during the special or the elections with respect to the amendments 1 and 2, I should say the abortion amendment and the weed amendment. And it just doesn't seem to work. Republicans just don't seem to embrace the early voting the way the Democrats do. And you have some thoughts on that. Can you tell us?
Yeah, I'm going to use my football coach analogy here. The rules of the game are what they are. Now, some of us may want to reduce the number of early voting days or change the way absentee balloting works, what have you. But the rules that are in place now are going to be in place likely between now and Election Day. And so, like in football, you can score points by running, kicking, or passing. If I walked out as a football coach and said, we're only going to score points by passing, we're not going to run or kick, I would lose all of my games. It's the same way with this. As a party, we can score votes by early voting, by absentee voting, or by election day voting. Pick which one you like. And the reason why this matters is things happen. You'll get a flat tire. Your kid will get sick. You'll get called away on a last-minute work trip, and you may not be here on election day. Maybe we're only talking about tens of thousands of votes. That can turn an election in Ohio for a statewide election, maybe even a presidential election. I think Donald Trump's going to do very well here in Ohio, but for local races as well. If you are, if you're willing to go ahead and request that absentee ballot and vote from the comfort of home, you can check on our website to make sure it's received by the Board of Elections at voteohio.gov/track, just like you track a package to make sure it's received, or received on your porch. And then early voting has the same safeguards as election day voting. You walk in, you show your ID, there's a bipartisan team, you get to put your ballot right in the box and you know that it's there. And so really, there's no bad way to vote in Ohio. I know that a lot of people like that civic experience of election day voting, and the ladies from the church have their bake sale and all the other great things that happen. But, you know, don't turn up your nose at early voting and absentee voting. It's a great way to make your voice heard and put those votes in the bank so that we know we have them.
Yeah, we are like-minded. I did a different kind of football analogy when I talked about this. Yours is just as effective, and I really, really hope that more Republicans understand the need for that. By the way, I like the one-day thing, too, and I wouldn't mind it being a national holiday. Get everybody a chance to get out there. You don't have to worry about, you know, going to work or doing it on your lunch break or after work, but before the polls close at 7:30, all that stuff. I like the idea of a single day, and I do like the bake sales that come along with it. But you know what? It is what it is, and you either adapt and you survive, or you try to hold on to something that is no longer viable and you die. And that's what the party is facing right now. So hopefully they will learn to adapt. Secretary LaRoz, great conversation. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And we'll hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Frank LaRoz on AM 1420, The Answer. The Secretary of State is spot on. So you heard what he said. There's three different ways for Biden to get on the ballot. And I'm fine with any of them. I really am. The only thing I don't want is for us, the Republican Party, to make it easy on them. It's not our job. Don't make it harder either. Just the law is the law. Law says you've got to certify your candidate as the nominee with at least 90 days before the election. That's it. Do it. It's up to you. How you do it is up to you. You want to hold a convention within the 90-day period, that's fine. If you want to get outside the 90-day period, that's fine. But just so you know, if you're not certified by then, you're not on the ballot. It's the law. It's not something that we're trying to do to you. And so since we didn't do it to you, you put yourself in this situation, it is also not incumbent upon us to try to save you, to try to fix you, to try to fix your error. As I've said before, and I'll say it again, I'm tired of fighting with boxing gloves when the other side is carrying around a 2x4 with a nail stuck out of it. They're beating us with that weapon while we're trying to score points on little jabs. Jab, poof, poof to the nose, poof to the nose. Pretty soon you get a nail in the side of the neck. Oh, but poof. I'm tired of fighting them by the rules. And technically, this is still by the rules, but I'm tired of trying to be kind and gentle and gentlemanly when they're out there, you know, attacking in a very, very different way, playing a very different game, fighting a very different kind of fight. We've got to do what it takes to win. And that means we don't make it easy on them when they screw up. Let them fix their own mistakes. All right, coming up on top of the hour. Next half hour, next 45 minutes or so are yours. You want to join us? 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. We have no guests in the third hour. That means we have plenty of time for you. What do you want to talk about? You heard the top nine at nine. You heard a very emotional video and a story that I told last half hour as well. You want to respond to those things or go off the board? We'll take your calls on AM 1420.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, onward we shall roll. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer. It is a Wednesday, and it's 8 minutes after 11 o'clock on this 24th morning of the fourth month, year of our Lord, 2024. This just in, the Ukrainian government is corrupt. I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, not because it's not corrupt. I'm saying that because it absolutely is. But it's one thing for Bob France to say it. It's another thing for Congressman Jim Jordan to say it. And Congressman Jim Jordan said it. And I'm so glad to hear him say so. This is one of the reasons why people think that, oh, you're pro-Putin. You must be pro-Russia. No, it must be that we are very, very concerned about the economic state of the United States, and we don't have $61 billion to be given away to anybody really right now, much less to a government that cannot be trusted. It's a government that is corrupt. This is part of the conversation that I really want to make sure that you get. And Congressman, what I really want to understand is everyone here who supports Ukraine think that this is some sort of democracy, some sort of you know, beacon of virtue in Eastern Europe that we should all be backing. It is a corrupt government. It's got a corrupt government led by a guy who canceled his country's elections and has declared that there will be no elections as long as there is a war going on. And he gets to decide along the war goes on. And he decides that by getting more money from us. So we are prolonging this thing and allowing a country that has no free elections, a country Congressman, I read the numbers yesterday. The latest survey from Ukraine, 89% of Ukrainians believe that their government is corrupt. 78% of Ukrainians say that their president is responsible for that corruption. So it's a corrupt government, and we're sending them money that we don't have, that we have to borrow from China. Make that make sense.
No, it doesn't. And the reason, 80-some percent of the Ukrainians think their government's corrupt is because it is. Like, it's one of the most corrupt places on the planet. And I actually think Zelensky may be a little less corrupt than the others. I mean, I think he's an improvement, but still, it's Ukraine, for goodness sake. We know how corrupt this place was. We've known this since clear back when the Democrats used Ukraine as the reason to impeach President Trump back in 2019. We've all known this. So we're going to continue to send money. It absolutely makes no sense. And not to mention, as you said, the $34 trillion debt we're under, and we're going to send billions of dollars. And remember, in this $61 billion, there was one line in there that said, I think it was $9.5 billion for economic support. What the heck is that? That's just money getting stuffed in somebody's pocket. Everybody understands that. But no,
that's not the worst one, Congressman Jordan. That's not the worst one. The worst one was $8 billion of American taxpayer dollars borrowed from China to fund the retirements and pensions of Ukrainian government officials. Ukrainian bureaucrats get their retirement funds padded by us. That's not stopping the Russians. That's not buying much-needed munitions and transport vehicles and so forth to stop Vladimir Putin. This is, they're stealing from us, and Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden, and they're waving flags, Ukrainian flags on the floor of Congress to celebrate the fact that they're stealing money from us. That's the reality of it. So that conversation with Jim Jordan was a little bit earlier this morning. If you want to hear the entire thing, it'll be posted at WHKRadio.com a little bit later on. It'll be available on my social media feeds as well. We'll put it up on Twitter and on Facebook and on Rumble and everywhere else. Jim Jordan admitting, hell yes, they are corrupt. I mean, there's a reason why this was part of the song.
And hunters in the basement with a silver spoon. Ukrainian bribes were going to be there soon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. I'll put aside your 10%, Dad. I'll always have your 10%.
Do you remember the Ukrainian bribe? Do you remember the Fed? Do you remember Joe Biden bragging about the corruption of the Ukrainian government? About how he, as vice president, got the prosecutor that was looking into the company that had hired his son to do nothing except provide access to the White House, completing the circle. Do you remember how he bragged about how corrupt the government was?
I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. Said, "No," I said, "I'm not going to. We're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was 6 hours. I looked. I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bitch, got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
So he literally was bragging about how he was able, with Barack Obama as president and Joe Biden as vice president, was able to get the prosecutor, the only decent guy, Shokin, who was investigating the corrupt Burisma, which is the largest natural gas company in all of Ukraine and run by the government, that hired Joe Biden's son, Hunter, who didn't know anything about gas or Ukraine or Russia or anything else, to sit on their board at a salary 10 times that of any other board member. I mean, it's a corrupt government, and now we're spending, like I said, sending $61 billion, more billion. This is, by the way, we're up to a total now of roughly, what is it, $230 billion. $230 billion to Ukraine for this corrupt government to buy, you know, to provide funding for pensions and all of the other stuff that Jim Jordan and I just talked about. So this is extraordinary. And by the way, he also did Congressman Jordan, about the deal that was struck between Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader and Senate Minority Leader. They came to an agreement that they would not allow any supplemental funding bill for Ukraine to not be attached to Israel, and any supplemental funding bill for Israel to not be attached to Ukraine. That way the Republicans would come along for one, the Democrats would come along for the other. Absolutely reprehensible, because the two situations could not be more different. The United States should absolutely back Israel. We know what the end of the war looks like. We know what the end goal is. We know that it's within reach. Giving them the assistance that they need to protect their own existence is absolutely reasonable and worthwhile. Sending money down a drain, an absolute bottomless drain in Ukraine for a corrupt government, one that is not an ally of the United States, except for the fact that the enemy of our enemy is our friend. You know, because, yeah, we all hate Russia, and we all oppose what Russia is doing and has done to Ukraine. All of that is true. But the truth of the matter is that Ukraine is not a long-standing democratic ally. They're not a democracy in the first place. They are a corrupt country with a corrupt government and a corrupt leader, and we are funding them. And the fact that McConnell and Schumer tied those two things together in order to get that sent over there is just it's what's the word I'm looking for? It is not irrefutable. I'm blanking on the word that I want here, but it's indefensible. I'll run with that one. I'll run with indefensible because it cannot be defended. All right, 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Whatever you want to talk about is fair game. The rest of the show is yours. We'll go to Michael, who is calling us from Cleveland. Michael, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, Bob. I will talk about the end of my story first so it'll make sense.
All right.
I like the way you talked about sending money down the drain. Okay, we all know in northeastern Ohio when it rains and our sewer system dumps up to 5 billion gallons of the sewage water into the beaches through Lake Erie every year. We've seen it when the beach closes. We've all seen that over the years. Okay, let me get back to the beginning. The federal government about 10 years ago came to the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District and said, we have an old sewer system. We have a what they call a combined sewer system where you flush the toilets. It's the same as the rainwater. So what happens is when we have massive rainstorms, it overwhelms the sewage treatment plant. And basically by Edgewater Park down at the beach, we dump in about 5 billion gallons of that dirty water a year. So the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District came up with a project. It is a $3 billion infrastructure project that is taking 20 years. They started about 7-8 years ago. And what has happened was, I'll explain the project really quickly. They're digging giant pits. One is even at University Circle they just completed to hold the water, and giant tunnels to connect all the pits around the city to hold the water till it can be used and cleaned at the sewage treatment plants. My point of this conversation is I do not believe Sherrod Brown got us a penny, and our sewer bills have doubled. And if you go on YouTube and punch in Lake Erie Clean Lake Project, you will see Channel 5 News talking about it and other short videos. And one last quick thing, I believe about a month ago, give or take, the Plain Dealer did a full 3-page spread on this infrastructure project. And since the government is printing money like toilet paper, you would think Sherrod Brown could at least get his own constituents some money for the one of the largest infrastructure projects in the state of Ohio. That is my comment.
All right. Well, I appreciate that call, Michael. Thank you very much. There was a lot of information that I did not have, so I like learning new stuff, and that is important. The fact that Sherrod Brown, now, it's one thing that he has not gotten a penny for the project. It's another thing to ask this question, which I really don't know, is he claiming that he has? Because you know what? I cannot stand the nonstop, I shouldn't say nonstop, they're not 24-7 because we're not close enough to the election yet, but I've seen enough of the commercials of Sherrod Brown bragging about how he got the chip plant. Excuse me. Trying to fight off a little tickle there. But how he got the microchip plant from Taiwan to the United States, or not really from Taiwan, but to open up that new chip plant in Columbus in order to lessen the need for some of the Taiwan production of those things. And the reality is that he did nothing of the sort. And he's sitting there on one of his commercials taking credit for something that he did not do. And I love how he says, by the way, I worked with Republicans to do A, B, C, D. He's trying to paint himself and portray himself to be some sort of a nonpartisan, somebody who works well across the aisle and can partner with the Republicans and blah, blah, blah. He is one of the most unbelievably disingenuous and duplicitous senators this body has ever had, that the other upper chamber has ever had, honestly. Every 6 years, he'll come back with the, look at what a great moderate I am. I'm a moderate Democrat who works with Republicans, and look what I was able to accomplish. And it's all lies, because he votes with Joe Biden, or, back then with Barack Obama. He's been there for so long, for crying out loud. But he votes with them, 97% of the time. He is not a moderate. He is not bipartisan. He is not nonpartisan. He is a very, very progressive left-winger who makes claims that are not true. So I don't know about acquisition of funds for that infrastructure project you just described. I don't know if Sherrod Brown has worked toward that at all. It's worth a question. Not that I'll be able to get him on, because I've had him on in the past, and of course, you know how it goes. You ask hard questions of people like that, you never hear them again. I've done it with countless numbers of Democratic elected officials in Congress and in the Senate over the course of 25 years, and I get one crack at these folks, and they're like, well, not going back on that guy again, because I won't butt kiss. I just won't. I'm not trying to make this all about myself, this response to your call, but I won't butt kiss these people, and so I won't be able to get questions answered from them about whether or not they are trying to get money or if they have claimed that they have, or in this case, he has. So thank you, Michael. Cheryl, next in Lakewood. Cheryl, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just want to add a couple more things about this story about the middle school boy who attacked a young girl.
Oh, in Philadelphia.
On Monday, that boy had his first court appearance. And when told that he would be remanded to the youth facility, the county youth facility, he grabbed a jug, a water jug, and started to attack the deputy sheriff.
Yes.
In the court. I mean, the clear evidence that this boy has so many problems was evident from a while back at his previous school, which was Penfield. He had threatened several girls. One of the mother of one of the girls, testified at the school board hearing, and she said her daughter was so afraid to go to the bathroom because, of course, the boys can use the girls' bathroom in Pennsylvania if they claim that they are identifying as girls. So her daughter and other girls were so afraid to go to the bathroom because of the threats from this boy that they would either go to the nurse's office and use the bathroom there, or not go to the bathroom all day long and wait until they got home. I mean, the level of insanity that we are witnessing as this one protected class continues to just lord over everything and everyone is phenomenal to me. And I see this as, once again, a missed opportunity by the Republican Party, because this is one of the issues that I think, other than a tiny portion of fringe progressives, everybody else is fully opposed to what is going on in terms of sacrificing girls and sacrificing girls' safety so that this one segment of sick males can do whatever the hell they want until they end up killing somebody, because that's what's going to happen. But we are not highlighting this issue as much as we should. And as I said, once again, to me, it's the Republican Party just wasting a missed opportunity to hammer home the fact that we are the only ones who care about these girls and women, the only ones.
And you know what's the reality? And by the way, every word you just said was spot on accurate, Cheryl, and I'm so glad you said them. You're right. But here's the thing. Sadly, so many of these Republicans are so afraid, if they live in purplish districts, if they don't feel like they're really, really insulated, they're afraid of drawing the wrath of the LGBTQ community and any moderates who are, you know, believers in the whole gender affirming care thing. And these people need to be, you know, put up on a pedestal the way that they are. I think there's a lot of Republicans who would like to speak out against it and to tell the truth like you just did about it, but they're afraid. It's always about the votes. It's always about elections. They're always afraid of what kind of backlash they're going to get if they say the right thing.
I mean, can they do math? I mean, basic math tells you that the people who are supporting this nonsense are a tiny fraction, other than in cities like, you know, New York, which was my home city. I know, you know, the feeling in those locations, but in the minds of normal voting Americans, no one is supporting this nonsense. Everyone is concerned about these girls. Everyone. I mean, the Republican Party has to grow a backbone. I mean, I'm saying something that I know is almost impossible to say, that they need to grow a backbone. But they do. We are going to lose our country if people don't start fighting the battles that need to be fought.
But, you know, again, Cheryl, I don't disagree with anything you said, except maybe to question the part where you say, you know, the overwhelming, you know, number of people in this country don't support this nonsense, that it's a slight, tiny fraction. I don't agree with that part, because 81 million voters, well, that's what they tell us. We know he didn't get 81 million votes. but 81 million Democrat voters who voted for Joe Biden-ish agree with this. They are backing the don't you dare say anything bad about a trans kid. Don't you accuse a trans kid of anything. Don't you not affirm, celebrate, and champion a trans kid, or else you're contributing to their suicide. This is what they say to parents. It's what they lie, the lie that they tell to parents, that if you don't go along with these kids and, like I said, celebrate who they are and what they are and tell them they're free to be themselves and so forth, then you are contributing to their demise. That's what they do, and really, the progressive left point, Bob, really, really pushes this. Yeah.
But at this point, Bob, do you really think that after all the things we've seen in the last couple of years, after all the trans attacks, after all of the trans shootings, after the trans daycare worker who assaulted a baby, who sexually assaulted an infant, after all, and I know that a lot of these stories are not reported by the mainstream media, but some of them are, and I think that they are changing minds. I know that among black voters, I happen to be black, and I talk to a lot of black voters who have voted Democrat their whole lives, and even they are saying that this one issue, when it comes to their daughters, when it comes to their daughters having to be in public schools, that this is an issue that will change their vote. And
well, but I think you answered your own question, though, Cheryl, because you said the media won't report on it. I think if people knew about this story in Philadelphia, if the media told that story, if the media told the story about the trans shooter who planned to, a mass school shooting at two different schools to become famous, you probably saw that story in the last couple of days. If they tell the truth about all of the things that this very mentally and psychologically deranged group of people are doing, then yes, it would change some minds. But they do their level best to bury those stories. You have to listen to a show like mine, watch a network like Newsmax or Fox or something to be able to find it anywhere. And most Americans aren't seeking those things out. So if they're not on their, the place where they absorb their news, and even if they go online and look things up, they won't find it. Because Google controls the algorithms that determine what results people get. So they bury these stories, and that's why that overwhelming number of people who support all things LGBTQ, and Pride Month is coming up in a month and a half, and all of that stuff continues to dominate the news cycle. They will not tell the bad stories for the reasons you just defined. So, Cheryl, great call. Thank you. I appreciate you being there. That's a great phone call. We'll take a time out here. It's 11:28. Right back on Always
The Answer.
Okay, it's 11:37. I got time for a few more phone calls, but I also want to play this part of the story. I played for you the 12-year-old girl's statement to the school board from the 18th. The one who witnessed the attack and whose name was second on the hit list of this trans student, this male pretending to be a female who was just going to beat to death as many of the girls as he possibly could. So I played for you the girls' commentary or testimony or statement or whatever you want to call it to the school board. She followed her father to the podium. This is what dad said.
And the question I have is, my daughter's going to talk because she was feet from the girl who was attacked. She was right there. She saw everything. And she's already told us many, many of the factual differences that are in the news. And I believe her. We've been told that the lockdown was 8 minutes. Many students said it was 28 minutes. From the first time the voices came in out saying it was lockdown to when they said it was lifted, it wasn't 8 minutes. It was 28 minutes, which is a huge difference. And many kids have said they know exactly because they looked at their phones. Why were kids not told they weren't allowed to call their parents, text their parents? Why were kids left in the room that this incident took place while they were cleaning the blood off the floor? My daughter calls me crying hysterically that they're cleaning blood off the floor. And I take this one of my good friends lost their daughter at Sandy Hook. I attended those funerals. So my daughter calls me saying there's blood everywhere. It's serious. So my questions are, my daughter went to counselors at 9 o'clock in the morning twice and told them this attack was coming today at lunch. It was known. She was number two on this girl's hit list, whether it was a written hit list or the hit list that this girl and her best friend, you probably know her name, but I guess we can't say it, making it well known who was on this hit list. There were three girls. My daughter was number two on that hit list. So what happened from the time you and your district got the warning that this attack was coming to when the attack happened? Because it happened exactly the way she told you it was going to happen. Two students went to those counselors. So how? I need to understand that. I understand mistakes happen, but you were told that this morning, and we have to talk to the police. We've been asked by the families. What happened from the warning to the attack? how can we see the video of this attack? Because we know the reporters are seeing it. So how do people that want to see what happened inside the school get to see that video? Because what we're being told is the reporters are saying they've seen a lot of videos, and this one's pretty bad compared to a lot of things they've seen. So those are my concerns. I'm going to ask my daughter, Emily.
Those are fair questions all the way around, but we know the answer. They knew that the boy who was threatening to beat up all of these girls was a trans who was saying he was a female. And they dare not question, challenge, confront, accuse, or investigate one of them, because they will be destroyed by the LGBTQ powerful, powerful lobby. That is the reality of it. If that kid was just normal Steve, and he was threatening to beat girls to death, and the girls reported it to the administrators and the teachers and so forth, they would be all over it in 2 seconds flat. Because they know they'd be on the hook if something happens. But because this person is not Steve, it's Mel who wants to be called Melanie, is a trans person, automatic protection, protected class. You can't talk to them in any negative way whatsoever. That's just truth. Derek is in Richfield. Hi, Derek. Go ahead.
Yeah, so they automatically get a free pass for whatever they do. And this is how, you know, this identity politics, because it's just based in irrationality, that consistency has no meaning with it, no meaning whatsoever. You're right. If you look up this story, yeah, it doesn't mention, it just said, oh, it was a fight. That's all. It was just, they dismissed it as a fight. They don't, of course they don't say that this person was a trans student, this troubled youth. You know, and especially if there were other students involved that this person, this kid attacked that were not white, so they wouldn't even cover that. That's what I'm saying. So if Black Lives Matter, they wouldn't even cover that, because they would be all over crying the white supremacist wolf any other time. If of any age someone committed an assault who was white against someone else who wasn't, but if they're trans, they're apparently not going to cover this at all.
1,000%. 1,000%. That's what I said in the early going, too. If it was a white student, particularly a white male student who has ever said anything, you know, remotely supportive of somebody like Donald Trump, and they said this person is threatening to beat people up and to assault them and attack them and so forth, absolutely, they would be all over that. But there's no way in hell that they are going to even start talking to a student who's being accused of this if they're trans, because they know full well that their affirmation and their support for a marginalized community that is already being harassed and being beaten up, and there are more, you know, assaults on trans kids and so forth because of all of these different states that are passing laws against, you know, allowing them to transition and to go through the changes and so forth. Everything that is in the news right now steers them away from confronting any of these kids. They have given them a feeling of superiority, invincibility, and as I said earlier on, a little bit of narcissism. They can do whatever they want, whenever they want, because they are trans.
But remember, look, Stanley Cuffs, Stanley Thermoses, they don't attack people. People kill people. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. It doesn't matter what the weapon is, even in this case. So there you go. Some person found a way to injure someone, but there was a warning. Any other case. And that's what those parents that just got charged in Michigan with their son who, you know, who shot his student, his classmates up, the parents got in trouble. How is there no liability? The school themselves, right? Well, obviously, we'll see if anything comes out of this. The school is warned directly. This person has a literal hit list, apparently, of writing a hit list out for people they're going to violently assault, and nothing is done about it.
And they're going to blame. And you know, and thank you, great call, Derek. I appreciate it. They're going to blame, as I said, people like me and you and legislators who have tried to stop this nonsense, this poisoning of young kids' minds. I got a headline in front of me right now from The Hill. Anti-trans legislation negatively impacts mental health of LGBT.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.